It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and our Friday news roundups continue now with our weekly look at the world of politics. Here, as always, to talk about what's been happening in Washington is Linda Kenyon, who covers Washington politics and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. She has other commitments during our live program today, so I spoke with her yesterday evening. She's joining us from the White House this week. Linda, always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be back.
So the budget talks continue to be the big focus in Congress this week. Has there been any sign of movement on this stalemate, particularly in the House?
You know, things have been going in fits and starts. It started out earlier this week with the most conservative wing of the House Republican Party basically saying no way, no how to anything at all, including a Pentagon spending bill. And that is highly unusual because Pentagon spending is usually very bipartisan, and Republicans in particular are very supportive of the U.S. military. So this was a situation which kind of set up what was going to happen for the rest of the week. Eventually, there was a little bit of wiggle room on Pentagon spending, a little bit of wiggle room on a continuing resolution, which is a short-term spending bill, which would fund the government operations through the end of the month of October, because current funding will run out at the end of this month. So with each step forward, there seemed to be two steps backward, and now we still have no deal on the continuing resolution, the CR, the overall government funding bill, and just a little bit of movement on the Pentagon spending bill. And keep in mind, the clock is ticking with a funding shutdown ending with the government spigot being turned off at the end of this month. There's really only less than about a week and a half of legislative days to get this all resolved.
You mentioned the shutdown, and I wonder if we can put a point on that for what that will actually mean in people's lives. Here in Illinois, we have a few National Park Service sites. There's the Lincoln Home in Springfield. There's a Naval Training Center at Great Lakes where the Navy's enlisted personnel get their training. Of course, we have post offices, Social Security offices throughout our state, Justice Department operations through the FBI and other agencies. What exactly would a shutdown mean? How would people see that in their lives?
Well, they would eventually see it in pretty much every aspect of their lives because the federal government is really funding so many of the operations that the American people come to expect. For instance, if you're getting a Social Security check or even a virtual check, you're not going to see that money in your bank account because the people who would process those payments will not be allowed to come to work because of a government shutdown. The federal workforce in general will be affected. There'll be certain people who will be responsible for working for everybody. They'll be considered, in air quotes here, essential personnel, which means they're going to be working double and triple overtime, and they'll have to be paid for that once the government is funded. Basically, what will happen is various programs that help seniors, for example, will not be in operation. Things such as food stamps, for example, which is now called SNAP payments, those might be affected as well. Pretty much every aspect of society eventually will be feeling the reverberations from the lack of an agreement in Washington.
So this lack of an agreement, as we said, we have this faction in the House Republican caucus that really wants, they say they want spending cuts. But of course, Democrats control the Senate. Democrats control the White House. But the action remains on the Republican side. And I understand even Senate Republicans are not pleased with what House Republicans have been doing with the prospect of this shutdown. What's making their approach in the Senate so different from what the House Republicans are trying to do?
You know, I should say from a look back, perhaps a 30,000 feet up look at how Congress has changed over the many years that I have covered Washington and Congress in particular, the Republican Party in the Senate is a completely different situation than the Republican Party in the House. In the House, the conservatives are the majority party. However, there is the conservative wing of the conservatives, and they seem to be driving the bus. And it's a very small faction, but they really have an oversized influence on what's happening in the House, and especially an oversized control over House Speaker Kevin McCarthy due to a deal he made with them that made him Speaker of the House in the first place. In the Senate, they seem to be much more moderate. There are a couple of exceptions here and there on various issues, but in the Senate, the Republicans seem to be much more what I would call traditional Republicans I have covered for a very long time. And they seem to be much more willing to negotiate on various issues. Not that they don't feel strongly like the House conservatives do, but they seem to be more willing to realize the reality of the situation. They are the minority party in the Senate. And in order for the minority to get its way on just about anything, they need a majority. And so they have to cooperate with the Senate Democrats in order to get anything done.
Well, the Republicans are a minority in the Senate, and it turns out in the Senate, you can be a minority of one and still cause quite a lot of mischief or, principled opposition, if that's one's perspective. And that brings us again to Senator Tommy Tuberville and how he's been holding up military promotions. Our U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth is herself a veteran of the Iraq War. She shared her thoughts on Tuberville's action at a news conference earlier this week. Let's listen just to a little bit of what she had to say.
You know, this is about our national security, something that Senator Tuberville says he would not jeopardize. He said that he would immediately lift this hold if he thought that it jeopardized our national security. Well, let me tell you, every member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said our national security is jeopardized.
Say more about that. Broadly, how does Duckworth feel about what's happening?
She's very upset with Tommy Tuberville. She has been a decorated war veteran. She was one of the first women pilots to serve to fly in combat missions for the Army. She was gravely injured during the Iraq War. She is a very strong supporter of veterans. And she's very upset with Tommy Tuberville, who she made a point of saying has never put on the uniform, has never served in the U.S. military, could have become a member of the U.S. military at any time, but chose not to. And he has absolutely no concept, in her words, of what the military does or how it operates. And for him to put a hold on more than 300 military promotions is reverberating in such a way that it's affecting morale, it's affecting readiness, and it's affecting national security. And she basically says to Tuberville, stop it.
Let's conclude today's conversation just with a brief mention of the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky. He was in the Capitol building on Thursday, the Pentagon, and the White House, again, where you are. The political landscape over U.S. support for Ukraine has changed significantly since his last visit here. How have you seen that playing out?
It has changed. In fact, again, we turn back to the House Republicans, the most conservative members of the Republican Party in the House, and they have been balking at more aid for Ukraine in the midst of these budget negotiations and a looming government shutdown. They had agreed, as part of an earlier deal with the White House, they voted on it and it passed by a bipartisan number, that there would be certain spending caps. And now they want to cut those spending caps. And so this has led to the showdown. And of course, Volodymyr Zelensky is on Capitol Hill asking for more Ukrainian aid. It comes at a really bad time. He really doesn't have a choice. The war against his country, waged by Russia, continues unabated. So he's mindful of the fact that his appearance on Capitol Hill is something that makes people somewhat uncomfortable to be asking for more money at such a time. But again, he is here in Washington. He has come here from the United Nations, where he made his appeal to the UN General Assembly. And again, this is a situation now where while the Republicans in general support the war in Ukraine, they're a little bit itchy about the amount of money that it is costing. In the Senate, however, there is widespread support for continued aid for Ukraine, as there is in the White House.
Linda Kenyon, as ever, we appreciate your reporting and expertise. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Brian.
And this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, back live. And we turn now to what's been happening in state politics and government. And for that, this week, we're joined by Jeremy Gorner, reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Jeremy, happy Friday. Welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Right. One of your big pieces of reporting recently is focused on the Prisoner Review Board, which is a relatively obscure, I would imagine, to most people, state agency. They make decisions about things like granting parole for the oldest inmates with the longest sentences. Some of the people you talk to say the board has been moving to the right politically and making fewer decisions to grant parole. What's going on there?
Well, this all stemmed, Brian, from last year when, when the state Senate, in a couple of rare moves, rejected two appointments from Governor J.B. Pritzker to the Prisoner Review Board. I think what really sparked all this, too, Brian, is that it's pretty rare for the Senate to reject any of the governor's appointments, let alone two from, like you said, a pretty relatively obscure board. And at issue were these decisions that the board was making with regard to older inmates. They're called en banc hearings. And in 2021, for example, I looked at 51 cases that were reviewed by the board. Then about more than 40% of those cases, the parole board granted parole. Now, if you look at 2022, which, the beginning of 2022 is when two board members were rejected, a couple others departed, one resigned, and then one appointment was pulled. Since then, out of 48 cases, less than 15% of the cases have been granted parole. And basically what the concerns among Senate Republicans is that the parole is, too progressive and too lenient, and basically letting out too many older inmates. And these are inmates who've been convicted of, especially heinous crimes. They were sentenced to under the indeterminate sentencing law prior to 1978. So you have, these are inmates who were serving, indeterminate terms of like 200 to 600 years in prison. And
the whole system for listeners, the whole system changed after that point, and now you basically get a determined sentence. It's going to be 80 years, and that's that. It's not this sort of like, well, it's a range, and we'll have a group of people decide if you can get out early. So the board's legal counsel, though, told you that it's impartial, objective, and independent. So how do people say politics are entering into this?
Well, because a lot of the board members who were either rejected, resigned, or left, were really championed by, Pritzker, and he's really taken a progressive stance on criminal justice reform. And, this was a time where, Senate Republicans who are more conservative were really crying foul over that. And once they came to a vote in 2022, keep in mind, this is a time where a lot of Democrats were up for reelection, and especially with the pretrial provisions of the Safety Act that were on the table for the as part of, an issue in the election for Democrats, the Senate Democrats rejected those appointments. They basically took the advice from the Senate Republicans, who were the super minority. So then what happened is that Pritzker appointed, and then part of the issue there, too, is that they weren't having confirmation hearings. These were temporary appointments that were awaiting confirmation. I've been told from the Senate that because of COVID and other factors, they didn't have those hearings. But then after those, four members left, they were down to just eight members at one point. And there was a lot of concern in the spring of 2022, whether the board would have enough members to function. So gradually from around the spring of 2022 until now, Pritzker started to build the board with more appointments, most of whom have been confirmed. And since then, I So I caught up with a couple of those same Senate Republicans who were crying foul in the early 2022 about the older makeup of the board, and they say that they're pleased with the direction the board has taken. And we're I've spoken to progressives on the other side of the issue, who advocates mainly, who are not happy. They think that the board has become too strict. So basically, that's kind of where we're at now. And then, like you said, Brian, the PRB is really scoffing at any notion that politics play a role in their decision making. I mean, they're obviously saying their decisions are very methodical, very well thought out. They actually have criteria. They base this on their behavior behind bars, the nature of the crime, how they're adjusting the prison, how they've adjusted the prison for decades, and if they have a solid parole plan for if they should be let out of prison. So while you have some folks on both sides of the aisle, you know, with Republicans saying that the board is doing as it should, and then you have some progressives saying the exact opposite, you really have the PRB kind of caught in the middle saying, hey, we're just doing our job.
And just about a minute remaining in our time together, but I guess, you know, we should note these are really difficult cases, right? You have people who are so old,
yes,
they are probably not, it's not like they're going to go rejoin a street gang and start, you know, holding up liquor stores. On the other hand, some of them,
right,
like you said, really heinous crimes, you know, murdering police officers, that sort of thing. These are really tough cases.
Right, right, right. And I think that the Pritzker's staff was probably banking on the Senate Democrats in early 2022 to actually accept Pritzker's appointments and confirm them. But a lot of Democrats, rejected them or just chose to sit out the vote. And, you know, a lot of the Democrats in the Senate are not, you know, several of them are not as progressive. A lot of them are suburban Democrats or downstate Democrats who are more moderate, who have perhaps different views on crimes than progressives.
Yeah.
So it was a really tough issue for the legislature and for the governor's office last year.
Interesting how the huge Senate Democratic caucus, the supermajority, has sort of diluted the progressivism in that caucus. But maybe that's a conversation for another time. Jeremy Gorner.
Depending on the issue. Fair enough.
Jeremy Gorner covers the State House for the Chicago Tribune. Jeremy, thanks for being with us. That was very interesting. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Brian.
Coming up after a short break, we are going to be talking about the Mountain Film Festival. It starts in Telluride, Colorado. It's coming to Illinois. That's after a short break. Stay with us.